From protests to bailouts, Sri Lanka's road to recovery a year on. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Yes, it's a year since Sri Lankan President Gotabaya Rajapaksa fled the country after months of mass protests against his government's handling of a devastating economic crisis. And since then, the IMF has given a bailout and a new government has promised to implement reforms to get the economy back on track. The BBC's Archana Shukla is in the capital, Colombo, and I started by asking her what life is like there now.
Well, if you go out in the streets of Colombo, at least, or the biggest cities in Sri Lanka, you wouldn't believe or you wouldn't realize that this country went through an economic crisis just a year ago when there were long queues, serpentine queues outside fuel stations. All of that is gone. So shortages on the ground have eased. Power is back up. But the problem on the ground is that prices have gone up extensively high. So inflation at 12%, although it steeply declined from 70% in September last year, it is still high. So prices are still going up. Food, clothing, housing, all of this is extremely expensive, and that's putting a lot of burden on people.
Now, back in March, Sri Lanka agreed a $3 billion bailout with the International Monetary Fund, but as usual, conditions are attached. Could you explain what they are and what impact they're having?
One of the biggest was the government had to increase their revenue base, which means they had to cut subsidies. So electricity, fuel, all have become expensive. They had to increase the tax base and the tax collection. So the income taxes have gone up by as much as 36% in certain cases. And that is one part that's affecting people quite a lot. The government is looking at privatization of some of the organizations like the state-run insurance company, Sri Lankan Airlines or Telecom. Now, this has seen a lot of protest and opposition from the trade unions. We met Anupa Nandula, who is part of the Ceylon Bank Employees Union.
What we say as the working class of the country, do not put that burden onto the public or do not put that burden onto the working class of the country because they are already penalized by this crisis.
So given the current conditions, what's it like for people running businesses?
Well, a large part of Sri Lankan economy is dependent on imports. And after the IMF bailout came in, non-essential imports like for auto parts, machines, electronics, and some of the food items, all of that has been lifted. So it has certainly given a boost and restarted the small businesses and the sectors across Sri Lanka. But the pain points remain. I met Chatura, who owns a grill kitchen in the heart of Colombo. It's a fine dine restaurant. And he spoke to me about the challenges that he's facing now after everything is opened up.
The running cost is massive. The income is same as before. Most of the skilled labor has left the country. During the crisis, even I had 14 chefs inside my kitchen. Right now, I have only two.
So behind the veneer of normalcy, there is still uncertainty. And if you speak to middle class, if you speak to small businesses, they'll tell you that the recovery in their lives is still a long way off.
The BBC's Archana Shukla, thank you so much for joining us in Marketplace.
Thank you.
Let's talk about another bailout. Pakistan has secured its own $3 billion deal from the IMF. And that just comes after a separate $3 billion of financial support from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Miftah Ismail served as Pakistan's finance minister until September last year.
Pakistan was in a very difficult financial position, and it was difficult to see how Pakistan could survive the entire fiscal year without some sort of a IMF program. But now in the last 2 days, we've had Saudi Arabia come through and has given $2 billion deposit to Pakistan. UAE gave another $1 billion of deposit to Pakistan. So Pakistani reserves have come back to a healthy level. And with the IMF program in place, I think we should be out of the deep crisis that we were in.
That was Pakistan's former finance minister, Miftah Ismail. Now, let's do the numbers. European and Asian stocks edged higher after a sharper than expected drop in US inflation. Europe's region-wide Stock 600 is up 0.6%, and London's FTSE has climbed 0.2%. Now, if you're a fan of tennis or you just have a passing interest, you may have been glued to the coverage of Wimbledon and London. But some of that coverage could be about to change thanks to artificial intelligence. Here's the BBC's Shona McCallum.
Wimbledon. a magical place for players and tennis fans alike. The oldest tennis tournament in the world.
15 love.
Sitting here on centre court, you really get a sense of the history at the All England Club. But not everyone is lucky enough to make it here to Southwest London. So for a lot of us, that means watching at home. Not that that's not full of excitement. But TV outlets don't routinely broadcast from the outside courts, and Wimbledon is keen to offer commentary for these on its website and app. It's been working with its IT partner IBM to offer commentary on matches generated by artificial intelligence. Aaron Bowman's their master inventor.
By the time, you know, a tennis point is over, I can create commentary in 1 to 2 seconds. Right, so it's really fast.
Tracking data from the ball, the players, and even the types of shots that they're making from different parts of the court are collected from cameras and fed into IBM's AI platform called Watson X.
That's a data platform where we can use generative AI as well as large language models. And what we do is we take all that information and we call it down into what's important into a trustworthy data set, and we feed that into this large language model, and then what comes out of it is text. Right. And then from that text, we then want to convert that to speech such that you feel like, you know, it's a human actually narrating the AI highlight in the video for you. And then that produces what you hear.
And this is what it sounds like.
Peniston plays Murray on the esteemed center court in the first round.
Both male and female sounding AI commentators are featuring on the app, but the voices have no human input.
Breakpoint opportunity for Murray.
They're created solely from computers.
Peniston hits a backhand winner on game point.
Jo Jury was Britain's number one in the 1980s. She's now a professional tennis commentator.
Oh, wow. Now we're going somewhere where it's a bit scary, I think. For me, in my mind, I can't quite understand how an AI would grab the feel of the situation. Yes, there might be certain things that happen in a match that you can say, oh, you know, they missed this or hit that. But what about the reaction of everything? What about the reaction of the player? What's just happened?
So whoever wins the tournament this year and in the years to come, there's one thing for sure. There'll be more technology keeping tabs on them than ever before.
Shona McCallum reporting. And finally, a Chinese company just beat American rivals like SpaceX and Blue Origin by successfully launching the world's first methane liquid oxygen rocket into space. That's a major win for the company Landspace, and it puts China ahead in developing reusable rockets fueled by methane, which is a safer, cheaper and less polluting option. I'm Leanna Byrne with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Thanks for listening.